Welcome to Vancouver.
Thanks, Shireen. For those of you who are listening, I've arrived in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and I've just sat down to drinks with my friend Shireen. We work together in Erbil, right, Shireen?
That's right.
In about 2014, so at the beginning of 2014, actually, right?
We did. I think you were there in the beginning. I arrived in June 2014, and we met in Basirma camp, I think at one of the camp coordination meetings, and you were standing outside talking to someone. I remember.
You can remember?
By. You're wearing a blue long skirt. I was like, oh, that's a pretty skirt for, you know, Kurdistan refugee camp.
You know what? I only wore that skirt like on World Refugee Day, and I think that was like 10 days after I had started with the Danish Refugee Council. So that must be the day you saw me.
You look good. I was like, this is the camp manager? You know, they travel in style.
Well, that's actually funny because when I wore that blue skirt, people came up to me and said, we thought you're Iraqi because you dress like us. Because, you know, most of us, when we're in the camp, we wear trousers or jeans or whatever.
Yeah, cargo pants, really hardcore. Like, yeah, it's nice to be a bit more feminine and, like, mix it.
Yeah.
I remember that.
So you were working with Handicap International at the time.
That's right. And actually, well, we had a partnership with your organization, Danish Refugee Council. I was working with Mary Dozdan. I hope she's listening to the podcast. And it was actually a really, really interesting experience. We were doing livelihood and just trying to make sure people with disabilities and vulnerable people in the camps were also considered in the refugee response. And you had this lovely little camp that you were looking after, so...
Yeah, and you know what I loved about that camp? My favorite thing about that camp is that the teachers volunteered on the weekends, and they would bring together all of the children who had disabilities and work with them in, like, a little community building.
Yeah.
And you worked with them a little bit, right?
A little bit. We were actually really lucky. It was a lucky find in Basirma, right? Basirma, right?
Yeah, that's it.
That's right. Remember, I'm not mixing it up with Gestapo, but in Basirma camp, they had a strong parents movement inside the camp. So the head of that movement, I can't remember his name, but he was a Kurdish Syrian gentleman who was trying to get parents together. That was not happening in any of the bigger camps. Like Haurgas didn't have that kind of movement,
and right,
Dara Shakran didn't. So we just lucked out that this, I think he might have had a child with a disability or a nephew, and he was really involved in the cause because he was a teacher in Syria of kids with disabilities.
Oh, okay.
So this tiny camp of 3,000 lucked out, had this great teacher,
right,
who was really involved. He was a bit disillusioned and a little bit sad, I think, with the NGOs at that point because he pleaded to a lot of them for some sort of support and it hadn't panned out. So we were trying to figure out, can we do something together? And I think we did do some small little events, some sort of things together. There's your sangria. It looks like a beautiful sunset, by the way. So we're sitting in a kind of trendy place called Chill Winston, and it's very sunny. Usually Vancouver rains like 8 months out of the year. It's a very rainy city. It's the most warm part of Canada, actually, but it does rain a lot. And it's kind of nice. Everyone's out enjoying the sun, so
it's so beautiful, and it has like such a happy atmosphere.
It is. It's as soon as it gets sunny, Vancouverites are out. They're out and enjoying it.
Yeah. And it's happy hour.
And it is happy hour, so we've got a couple hours to load up here.
So that's great. So, you know what I remember?
What do you remember?
I remember that we went kayaking together.
I remember that too.
And that, I was a horrible kayaker.
No, you weren't.
Do you remember?
I remember we were in the same boat.
Yeah, but we were at the, like, an hour behind everyone else.
No, we were.
Yes, we were.
At the beginning we were, but then we caught up.
Maybe when we switched positions and you were the one who was like leading.
I think we took the road less traveled. I think we took like a bit of a detour, but it was.
But awesome. I feel like we kept going in circles, and I remember my arms being so tired that I just laughed hysterically at the fact that I couldn't do it.
That was a magical day. I think that was one of the weekends where our curfews were removed because my NGO is pretty strict usually with the security rules, and I remember the curfew was removed and I felt just free. I was like, finally we can go and do something outdoorsy, and to do that in Kurdistan was amazing because I feel that's what Kurdistan is good for, like nature, mountains, kayaking. It was
well
cool.
Do you even remember the name of the river? I don't remember.
No, unfortunately. I remember my friend Diane Williams was there too, who's a physiotherapist who's from Vancouver. I saw her a couple days ago.
Oh, really?
On that trip too. Yeah.
Oh, wow,
it's
cool.
It's amazing what a small world it is, how you kind of see people again.
Right, so small. But you're here visiting your sister.
I am. So I was raised here, so this is my hometown, and and it's kind of my base. I need a base, you know, as an aid worker. As you probably know, you just need to come back to something and feel rooted in something. And this is where I kind of find my roots and my friends. And yeah, my sister and her family are here. My friends are here, some of my friends. And it's nice to come home. I've been home really long, a long time, actually 3 months, which is the longest.
Okay.
It's been in a few years. Usually I stay a month and then I go on to the next talk. It's been actually really good to kind of reflect and be like, where do I stand in my life? I've been, you know, doing aid work about 8 years now.
Since, oh, wow, that's such a long time.
And it was a few breaks, but not a long break. And
right.
I was like, okay, how do I feel? Do I want to continue? Do I want to come back to Canada? Can I come back to Canada? Or am I not able to? You know, you always wonder, are you so interested in the work you're doing abroad that it's hard to come back to your home country?
So have you come to any conclusions? You know, I'm at my 4-year mark.
Are you?
And so it was 4 years with no break, the longest break being about 4 or 5 weeks, always at Christmas time, and then starting again in January, something like that. And so when I left Iraq this time, I kind of told myself to take the rest of the year off, which that's like really, really long when we're talking about humanitarians taking breaks. I feel like, you know, that's a long break.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I was wanting to give myself some freedom to just have fun and not force, because if I said I'm taking a 4-month break, then I would start looking for jobs at 2 months.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know, that's kind of how it goes.
Yeah,
and I wanted to like fully not even think
off.
About it.
It's a very helpful process, because I think in between jobs, you are constantly looking for jobs, and still your mind is in the work. And I think taking a proper break and not researching it is very useful. I think it's really important to get back into this kind of normal-ish life for a little while to know what it's like not to be on mission, because we lead a really interesting but really unusual life with... I think what's hardest for me on mission is the temporariness of the relationships and of the experience. It's amazing.
Right.
It's intense. It's so interesting. It's like probably the highest highs we'll have in our lives. But it's all very transient. So
right.
I think I struggle with that. And that's what's actually pushed me to consider coming back to Canada. Because I just feel like I have so many friends all over the world, but I hardly see them.
Right.
And, there's a message here and there, an email here and there. But... So what I haven't reached a solid conclusion, but what I've realized is if I do come back to Canada, I think my life would be more balanced. Like I would have some longer term friendships, relationships, family, connections. Like I've missed a lot of weddings. I've missed some occasions with my sister's kids, and those things, you know, you just look back and you're a bit sad on that.
Yeah.
The happy hour dates for you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so we just had some stuffed dates brought, which are only grown in the Middle East, by the way, dates. There's like a couple countries that grow it, Iran, where I was born, and a few countries around there. So this is kind of cool. And they're stuffed with goat cheese.
I wish you could see them. They actually...
Maybe we'll take a picture and post
them. Yeah, I don't know how to do that yet because I'm not high-skilled at the podcast, but they look beautiful.
Well,
but they actually look a little bit like cockroaches.
Well, they do. What's like pus coming out?
Because they don't look beautiful, but I'm sure they're gonna taste
they're
great.
They're gonna taste good.
Cheers.
Cheers, John. I don't know. So where I'm at? So I'm actually going to. Do you know where I'm going in 2 weeks?
Where are you
Can
going?
Can you guess? It's back to
Yemen.
No, close, but more stable.
Jordan?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. So I'll be going there I'm going initially for 6 months, but I could stay much longer than
right.
that. It's a livelihood project inside Syria in a big consortium with 4 or 5 other NGOs.
Oh, nice. So are you working with Handicap still? Or?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
We're going to be supporting a few other NGOs, maybe I shouldn't name them all, but in trying to... You know, the war has been ongoing for about 5 years now, and people are having a hard time. They know they're not welcomed in Europe. They know that there's a big risk in crossing the Mediterranean, so a lot of them are actually taking their chances and staying in Syria and, like, trying to make it work there. So in the semi-stable zones where everyone's been displaced, there's a lot of competition for work and all that kind of stuff. So it's just trying to get livelihood going in a chronic war, in a crisis.
And I think that's what we hear the most, right? That people, when you ask people what they need and what they want, usually, you know, unless they're on the front lines, it's livelihoods.
Yeah. And it's also about dignity. I mean, getting a handout only works for so long, you know, then you need to have something that you put your energy in, because you can't just sit there in a state of uncertainty for years and years. You gotta like kind of get going again in your life, and I think it's really hard. And so I'm an occupational therapist as well, that's my background, and we believe everyone has a right to have a meaningful thing to do, something that they do that they feel good about, you know, and more time,
whether or not
you don't
they have
just
a disability
sit around. anybody.
Right.
You know, something meaningful that you... Yeah, when you're stuck in a war or as a refugee, there's so much uncertainty around your life. You're feeling really frustrated. You gotta have things that you can put your energy into, you know, to be proud of. So that'll be interesting. We'll see how it goes.
Well, I have some friends that are already there, so maybe you probably know people who are there too, right?
A couple people. That's actually nice because Jordan is like a country of reunions. There's some countries where you know there's a lot of people that go. Like Haiti was a country after the earthquake where everybody went. And there's a few places, and I think Jordan will be. I know a couple people.
Well,
so.
I'm excited for you. It makes me almost want to go, but well, I'm on my road trip and I have to kind of stay the course for a little while.
But you might, who knows? Oh, okay, so I'm going to try and learn Arabic on Rosetta Stone.
Oh, on Rosetta Stone. I tried the freebie lesson of that.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you, because I'm actually Iranian, so we speak Farsi, we don't speak Arabic, so I would love to learn Arabic as a very useful, widely spoken language. So how hard is it? What do you think?
Oh, no, I didn't think it was hard at all. Okay. I love it. For me, I mean, I studied it in university, but the first course I took, like, I had signed up for a class that got canceled, and so I had to hurry up and find an online course. So my first course was online with a teacher, and we have the book and the curriculum and everything, but we would have, like, one-on-one Skype lessons to check in how we were doing. And it was so hard the first 6 weeks, especially because it was really intense, and I had to learn to read and write and talk all at the same time within the first week. It was expected that I would sort of be reading and writing within 1 week.
That's hard.
But it became like a game to me because, you know, the letters are so different and you're learning to write them and recognize them when you read things. And to me, that was like so thrilling.
It's a beautiful script. If you look, it's very unusual from right to left.
Right.
All these dots.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. And so like learning to recognize words, or even if you don't know what the word is, but recognizing where it starts and stops.
Yeah.
Like I was so excited about that because, you know, when you hear a foreign language, sometimes it just seems like one run-on thing and you don't know if they've ended a word, if they've started a word. So, I mean, I totally love it. I would love to go back and do another intensive course. One of my goals, I say, is to be fluent within the next 4 years. But that would mean I'd have to go back, you know, maybe to Lebanon or something. And maybe I'll come visit you in Jordan and take some classes.
Yeah, come. Someone who inspired me, I don't know if you remember Federica. Shout out to Federica.
Yes, she is so good at her Arabic.
One of our colleagues, and she's in Yemen right now, actually. Really bored, I think, in Sana, but hopefully things will pick up. But she spoke really good Arabic, and she's Italian. And
yes.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, and she's
too,
so
inspirational. I'm like... I'm loving it, so hopefully I'll get somewhere.
So you're going to Jordan, but the last I heard is you were in Nepal.
I was actually in Laos.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. I was in Nepal a few years ago, so I probably talked about Nepal because it's a very special
country.
Before
or after Basirma, you were in Nepal?
I was before.
Oh, okay.
A few years before. But yeah, so I was in Laos in Southeast Asia. I kind of wanted to change. I come from what we call a development background, not an emergency background. So after Iraq, I thought, okay, let me go back to just a really stable context where I can kind of get my bearings and be able to walk outside and bicycle and just not ask for security clearance every 5 minutes from my security guy, right? So Laos was great for that. I had all the freedom in the world. And
did you live on a beach or like, no, it's landlocked?
I lived in this like little straw house. It was a little bit dark, but it was really cute and with like a lot of trees. Yeah.
Was it your own place or you shared with other people?
Yeah, it was my place. That was the big difference too. In
Very
Iraq,
nice.
We lived in like communal housing with 6 people, including my boss. Like, so
yes.
That's a different dynamic. And then in Laos, I lived on my own. It was nice. It got a little bit lonely towards the end of the year, I think, having all that space in a foreign country. But it was good. I think I needed that as a contrast to Iraq. And I feel, after doing that, I think now I'm also ready for Jordan, which is going to be, again, intense Middle East, co-housing with a few people, not too many, just 2 other housemates. So I think it's good to alternate your experiences, too, when you're working abroad. If you do a lot of intense kind of missions, it can really burn you out. So you kind of need, for me personally, I like to alternate kind of context and just different areas of work. So in Laos, I was working at a children's hospital on early childhood intervention. So that was really interesting. So yeah, it's cool. I think it's good just to do different
things. Laos, was it still with refugees then, or no?
No, it was
more
just with Laos.
Like more people. Development work.
Exactly. So there's, you know, it's one of the poorest countries in Southeast Asia, and their health indicators are not ideal. So it was to support the doctors and the nurses and the physios to be able to screen children coming in for vaccines to see, do they have delays? And if they do, to stimulate the kids and train the parents on how to stimulate the kids. And about 40% of children in Laos have delays. It's really high compared to other countries.
So. Do you know why that is?
Malnutrition, mainly.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the parents are working, so it's not like they're able to read to the kids. The parents may not be literate, may not be playing games with the kids. Like, they don't have the time and luxuries that we may have in the West, you know, to really stimulate our children, so...
Well, that sounds like a really interesting work, and I'm really excited for what you're about to do in Amman, and I'm so glad that I got to catch you before you go, that you happen to be here in Vancouver.
It's so serendipitous.
It made my day to sit here and to talk with you, but I think it's time to sign off. Thank you so much for sharing with the podcast listeners about your work.
Lovely.
And let's enjoy the rest of our cheeks.
Can you teach me something in Arabic before we go?
Okay, what would you like?
I guess cheers, because... Is there a special cheers?
No, because they use the French. You know, they use like bon appetit when they eat. You know, they take that from the French. But
when you're eating, is it also bon appetit? Okay, yeah.
So yeah, but...
What's the most useful word, like in Arabic?
Most useful word...
Thank you is pretty useful.
Afwan is like, excuse me.
Afwan, okay.
And I think I use that one a lot.
Okay.
And it's also you're welcome.
Afwan.
Yeah, thank you. You're welcome and excuse me.
Okay.
So you could try that one.
Good. Afwan it is.
And then masalama.
Masalama means what?
Goodbye. Okay, goodbye, masalama. Everyone. Masalama kulu.
Masalama. Or in Persian, khoda hafiz.
Khoda hafiz.
If you ever go to Iran, you can use that.
Next time. Yeah. Well, I'm American. I can't go to Iran.
Yeah, you can. I told you, 1,000 Americans a year go as tourists.
As tourists, you're right.
You could go, but maybe not. Like, no, there is DRC in Iran. DRC is working in Iran.
Okay.
And NRC. So
you could take me.
I could take you.
All right. Looking forward to that.
All right.
All right.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.